This week on Straight Talk Africa, what drives migration in and out of Africa, often to treacherous routes to other countries? Some migrants are seeking better jobs or asylum, and others are fleeing war and persecution. How can the international community meet the challenges of managing migration, asylum seekers, and refugees? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent McCorry. We live in a world where people often move to other places to seek better opportunities. However, sometimes people are forced to move to flee conflict or persecution. Europe is seeing a surge in migrants entering its eastern border from Ukraine and its southern borders from Africa and the Middle East. Managing the flow of migrants and processing their information, separating asylum seekers for others, is now a major challenge. After years of political wrangling and court battles, British lawmakers recently passed legislation which the government hopes will allow it to deport asylum seekers arriving in small boats across the English Channel to Rwanda, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London. The dangers of the migrant crossings were underlined just hours after the law was passed.
A grim reminder of the dangers of the migrant journeys across the English Channel. Five people died, including a young child, when an overloaded inflatable dinghy carrying migrants got into difficulties off the French coast. French authorities say 112 people were on board.
Despite this complex and delicate situation, 57 people who were still in the inflatable boat remained on board. Not willing to be rescued, they managed to restart the engine and decided to continue their sea route towards Britain.
Such is the determination of migrants to reach Britain. Over 6,300 people have made the journey in small boats so far this year. The tragedy came just hours after British lawmakers passed legislation aiming to send to Rwanda all asylum seekers arriving across the English Channel. Migrants would be processed in Rwanda and have no right to return to Britain, even those granted refugee status. The legislation effectively orders the courts to ignore existing British laws or international treaties that could block the deportations. It's not yet clear if further legal challenges could delay the flights. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the prospect of being sent thousands of kilometres away to Rwanda will deter migrants from making the journey to Britain.
The first flight will leave in 10 to 12 weeks. Now, of course, that is later than we wanted, but we have always been clear that processing will take time.
The government argues the policy is moral as it aims to end the dangerous journeys operated by people smugglers. But the United Nations called for Britain to rethink the legislation.
By shifting the responsibility for refugees, reducing the UK court's ability to scrutinise removal decisions, restricting access to legal remedies in the UK and limiting the scope of domestic and international human rights protections for a specific group of people, this new legislation seriously hinders the rule of law in the UK and it sets a perilous precedent globally.
Under the deal, Britain is paying Rwanda at least $458 million over 5 years, with extra payments on top worth tens of thousands of dollars for each migrant sent to the country. The opposition has called it an expensive gimmick that won't work. The passing of the legislation after years of delay is a political victory for Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Whether the policy deters migrants from making the deadly journeys across the English Channel remains to be seen. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Well, that was Henry Ridgewell reporting from London. With us now to help us understand the intricacies of managing the flow of migrants into the United States is Aline Barros, a VOA's immigration reporter, and I'm delighted to have you with me in studio. Now, in terms of the processing, help us understand the rule that is being applied at the moment. We know there was a time that actually there were moves to kind of have the migrants processed somewhere deep in Mexico. But what is the current rule for a person trying to get into the U.S.?
So right now, asylum, you can come to the United States, you have the right to ask for asylum. However, since last year, May 2023, the Biden administration announced the asylum rule, which critics say it is an asylum ban, but the Biden administration say it's not. Basically, you have to prove to the government that you try to get asylum at another place, that you try to get protection at another place, that you have a credible fear that you will be in danger if you are sent back to your country, and that, or that you have a CBP One app appointment. All of that is trying to avoid people to cross in between ports of entry. There are exceptions for minors and family units, but the overall rule is you have to show us that you try to get help in another place. It is going through litigation. It is going through the courts right now. We don't know when this will be done, but 2 weeks ago, a federal court judge agreed with the Biden administration, but it might not stay on for too long, so we have to see what's going to happen.
Now, there are some who are still maybe of the mind that, oh, the U.S. is doing the same kind of thing that U.K. is doing right now, like take them as far away from the border. Now, that went down. Was it because of legal complications or political
shifts? No, we actually have Mexico and the United States working together. You know, if you see the latest encounter numbers, it's actually decreasing right now because Mexico has been enforcing its border, you know, before people arrive to the Mexico, the U.S.-Mexico border. So Mexico has been doing a lot of work and with the United States and working together. So that's why you're seeing a decreasing number, but you still have a lot of people coming to the border and trying to ask for asylum.
In talking about a lot of people, how significant is the number of people from the African continent trying to enter the United States from the southern border?
So the latest data that we got is that about 60,000 people in fiscal year 2023. We're still going through fiscal year 2024, but we've got a significant increase from fiscal year 2022 to 2023, so much so that before, the 54 countries from the African continent used to be categorized as other, and now you actually see the names of the country because there has been an increase in migrants from the African continent coming to the United States.
And the migration issue, of course, has always been a polarizing issue and is partisan in so many respects. At the moment, is there a kind of a bipartisan solution to this, or still it is kind of a situation where when the next party takes over the White House, we can expect changes, or at least the House?
No, it's still very much polarized. Republicans want a bigger wall. They want more physical barriers. Democrats want more technology. They want a path to citizenship for those folks who are here undocumented. And Republicans want to stay away from the family-based sponsorship categories and go into a merit-based sort of immigration to the United States. So, no, we don't see, the experts that I talk to do not see any sort of reform happening anytime soon.
Wow. So we'll keep watching this.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Aline. And thanks for your insights. It is time for a short break now. When we come back, we're going to examine the plight of refugees and other forcibly displaced populations on the African continent. We'll be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. We are discussing the challenges of managing the refugee crisis. Across Africa, migration has been on an uptick over the last 20 years. Let's take a look at this graphic. Now, the green color in the bars represent Africans moving within Africa, often from rural to urban areas for employment. But it also represents a large number of people displaced by war or conflict. The blue section in the bar represents Africans who leave the continent for better opportunities or to seek asylum. In both cases, the numbers are rising. The orange section on the bar represents people migrating within Africa. With me to further discuss the state of African migration is Abdoulaye Alake, a senior advocate for East and Southern Africa Refugees International. And from Nairobi, we are joined by Mamadou Diagne Baldé, the United Nations Refugee Agency's Regional Director for the East Horn and Great Lakes region. Gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Now, I want to begin with you, Mr. Baldé, in Nairobi. So just for the benefit of all, could you briefly explain to us how the 1951 Refugee Convention, or the Geneva Convention as it's known, defines a refugee, and also what kind of rights that kind of a person is entitled to, and what are the responsibilities of nations as regards to that convention?
Thank you, Victor, for having me. The 1951 Convention remained the foundation for refugee protection. People who cannot live in their countries because they fear of being persecuted because of their race, religion, and some of additional reasons, cannot go back home, are defined as refugees. But in addition to that, what the African continent did was in 1969 was to complement that global convention with a OAU refugee convention that also states that there are people who might not qualify for the refugee or under the refugee convention, the Geneva Refugee Convention, people who flee conflict, generalized violations of rights, and who flee their own countries can also be considered as refugees. This leads you to a continent where today we have over 15.2 million refugees and asylum seekers. And I have to say, when in several parts of the world where governments are closing their borders, we see communities, countries that are hosting refugees, that are sharing what they have, access to water services, education, health, and additional opportunities. So I think Africa remains a generous country, a generous continent. African countries like Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, Rwanda, and all of them keeps receiving large number of refugees, and that generosity needs to be supported.
And Alake, here, you know, He just referred to the generosity of Africa. We've seen the Western countries being a little tougher on accepting more people in. But some of the countries that are accepting refugees are themselves actually suffering from serious climatic changes, economic hardships. How well are they being assisted by the Western world, the international community, to manage those refugees? Countries like Chad, we've seen Sudan, we've seen South Sudan and others.
No, thank you so much. I think it just demonstrates again that, you know, what we have around refugee crisis is largely a manufactured crisis. Countries that are hosting refugees are not complaining about refugees. The way countries that host very few refugees, and they are largely in the Western Hemisphere, complain about it, particularly because of obvious domestic reality. The reason why these countries are hosting is, if you just take the example of Sudan, which has got the largest displacement as of now, Sudan generates refugees, Sudan also hosts refugees. So they know that. Look, for instance, Chad, even before the outbreak of this conflict slightly over a year ago, used to host over 400,000 Sudanese refugees. Uganda, they host 1.2 million refugees. Kenya hosts over 0.5 million refugees. Ethiopia hosts almost a million refugees. But those countries also generate refugees. Sudan, 800,000 of the people who are refugees in Sudan before the outbreak of conflict were from South Sudan. But the reality is that we can actually host refugees and be able to do that. I'll just give you an example. I just returned from Kenya. Kenya has a new refugee law, Refugee Act 2021. That law not only allows Kenya to host refugees, it goes a step further and says that refugees have got right to work, refugees have got freedom of movement, refugees can own property. At the time you're seeing today beginning, the UK is starting its first removal of people to send it to Rwanda. Kenya is going in the opposite direction.
Now, and that's very interesting because I know for a long time in Kenya, the refugee had to stay in the refugee camps, could not own property, could not work. So that's quite a revolutionary move. Mr. Balder, in terms of the definition as we've clearly put it there, one of the other things that has complicated, issues is how do you handle people, for example, who move from one country to another and then another. How does, say, the UNHCR handle those in terms of recognition and designation? Say a person is displaced from the DRC but finds his way through Uganda and finally in Kenya.
What you have is really, it's not, refugees are not refugees only in the neighboring countries. The refugee status is not relating to whether you have crossed several other countries to seek asylum. People who are forced to flee go to where they feel they can have a safety and then they seek asylum. And the obligations that member states have, whether African countries or countries beyond Africa, is to fairly determine their eligibility. And this is what we see on the continent. As indicated earlier, you have countries that have challenges of their own, but despite the challenges that they are faced with, continue to host refugees. Chad was cited, Sudan was cited, Kenya was cited. And what we have seen beyond all of this, beyond the brotherhood, the sisterhood, is a recognition that refugees, by bringing their own capacities, can contribute to the countries that are generously hosting them. So three things I really want to highlight. One, the generosity of the African countries. Number two, the need for solutions. And we have seen Kenya through the Shirika plan, for example, transforming the way Kenya has been receiving refugees until now. But number three, what we also are asking for is, in addition, and this goes directly to the question you've asked about onward movement beyond the countries of origin, what we need are ways to respond that support not only the refugees, but also the host communities, so that, you know, my friend just spoke about the Sudanese situations now. You have 1.8 million refugees who have fled Sudan since April last year. We are entering the second year. We have seen of these 1.8 million refugees, we see over 30,000 that cross South Sudan and find themselves into Uganda, which is already hosting 1.6 million refugees. So what do you do? As international community, as per the Global Compact on Refugees, UNHCR is working with member states, with regional entities like IGAD, with the World Bank, with additional development partners, so that we support the refugees and we support those people, communities that are hosting them.
Yes.
So that we can reduce on movement.
Yes. And Abdullahi, here we can also talk about the collaboration between, organizations like yours, like UNHCR, with the African Union and the international stakeholders. But another question I wanted to put forth is how the countries and organizations like yours deal with people who actually move back and forth for different reasons. We have had situations where a person initially had left Somalia and moved to a Kenyan refugee camp for security reasons, later moved back to Somalia, but came back to Kenya because of drought. It's not conflict anymore. So how do you handle those kind of situations?
I think Mamadou mentioned something at the top when he said that for the way the African Union Convention defines refugees, it expanded the definition of refugees from just people who are running away for safety and security because of their religion and every other thing, but also because of the breakdown of law and order. Climate change then becomes one of those things. You can see in other parts of the world where countries are very, very, very skeptical, or sometimes even very hostile in defining people who have been displaced because of drought, because of flooding, as people who actually qualify for refugees. I think the point here is that the OEU Convention expands the definition of refugees because flood, famine, drought, all those are issues that lead to the breakdown of general order. Mm-hmm. Once they come, they still retain their obligation upon the determination by the authorities in those countries. And I just want to make it very clear for our viewers that there are two ways in which the refugee determination can be done. One is the individual refugee determination status. You come, they go through, you tell your stories, and they are counter-checked. But then there is the prima facie determination of refugee status, where it is given to a group. You come in, we first accept you as refugees, and then all other things take after that. I think that is the beauty of the expanded definition of refugees under the OAU Convention, and that is how it should be done.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mamadou, very well, the recognition is there. There's expansion of the understanding of who is a refugee. How does that translate into the help that is provided, especially at the international level, in terms of financing, recognition of the actual numbers, no dispute over who is a refugee, and who should get help?
No, thank you. And Victor, as Abdullahi just said, you see that level of generosity that we note. You have communities that open borders, let's say between Kenya and Somalia, between Ethiopia and Somalia, Chad and Sudan. They share what they have, and it is up to the international community to come with that responsibility sharing to provide financial resources.
We do see, we hear the pleas from you, but to what extent actually do we see the international community responding to the crisis, especially in Africa, say as compared to other regions of the world?
Response is being provided, and you have financial support provided, and we see it happening. But is it enough? No. Is it enough provided also by the private sector? No. Is it provided sufficiently to help people become more self-sufficient so that they are not always relying on donor contributions, no. So I think the responsibilities we all have here is greater support from the international community, as well as policies that help refugees move more freely, take care of themselves. And if we have both of them, and we have countries of origin that are supported to create conditions so that people can return home, we will be in a much better shape. And this is what we fight for, and this is and these are the efforts that we are making, Victor.
Yeah. Now, Abdullah, in terms of the reactions, people see, for example, a refugee, say, in Eastern Europe, the treatment is different, the look is different, even of the refugee camps. From your experience working in the field, are you getting the kind of reaction or support, or is there an apathy, a spirit of apathy, where also the world is getting used to Africa as being a continent of refugees anyway?
I think your point about disproportionate focus on other kinds of refugees compared to African refugees is a valid point. If you look at the population of Sudan, it is slightly higher by just a million or two than the population of Ukraine. But if you look at the amount of funding that has gone to the Sudan response and the response of the region that are supporting Sudan in terms of hosting the refugees, those numbers are world apart. If you look at the high-level visit from various Western donor countries to Ukraine versus Sudan, it's world apart. And here I want to make one thing very clear. What Ukraine is getting is richly deserved, and everyone should get that kind of treatment. Just giving money is not enough. Giving adequate amount of money to support countries that are doing the right thing is the right thing to do, because you cannot solve this problem alone. Chad, if you look by all the development indicators, Chad is not a wealthy country, but it is hosting the refugees. But is Chad getting the kind of support, including the host communities of Chadians? No, it's not. South Sudan. South Sudan has taken in so many Sudanese refugees. So I think your point is well taken, to the extent that there is a disproportionate support to one group when compared to other forms of refugees, when all of them are people running from persecution and fear and safety.
So, Mamadou, what more should be done? Because it's obvious that it's not exactly, the kind of a response is not necessarily adequate. You're actually asking for more. What exactly would you like to see?
Countries hosting refugees need to be further supported through humanitarian funding, development funding. And countries like Kenya, Chad, Uganda, Ethiopia, who are having policies that include the refugees, help them live more dignified life, should be further supported. But above all of this, what we need are peace. What we need is solutions so that refugees, and this is what they dream for, and this is what they tell us whenever I visit my regions and whenever I meet the refugees. This is what they are crying for. They want to return home. So they need peace as well.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll leave it right there. I would like to thank you both. Abdullahi Alaki, Senior Advocate for East and Southern Africa at Refugees International, and Mamadou Diagne-Balde, Regional Director for the East Horn and Great Lakes region of the United Nations Refugee Agency. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.